But okay, without further ado, a pleasure to welcome back Nechama Price for Yosef. Vakasha, it's all yours. Thank you.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Can everybody hear me? Not the people who have their videos. Okay. So I know last time we had problems with the Zoom and my voice broke up. So I have already my phone connected. So please, if that happens again, somebody please unmute themselves and tell me, and I will switch to my phone so that we can have a smooth share this morning. But I hope there should be no issues at all. Is everybody hearing me just fine? Great, thank you. I'm going to share screen so that everybody has my source sheet.
This is muted, right?
Could you raise the volume a little?
So again, I'm on top volume. I think that you have to raise it on your computer. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I think that's the only way it works. Maybe sign out and sign back in. See if that helps. I'm sorry, whoever you are. Okay. Can everybody hear me just fine? Okay. So let's start today for our third part of our series on Yosef. I enjoy doing this three-part series because it's kind of fun to examine the personalities of the different children of Yaakov. As you know, I've written a book on this topic, Tribal Blueprints. You're enjoying the Shiurim. I encourage you to go buy it. But we spent the first two Shiurim talking about the children of Leah. So I thought it would be fun, since we're doing leadership tribes, to spend our final Shiur talking about the first child of Rachel, which is, of course, the favorite, the golden child, and that's, of course, Yosef. The reason why his situation is so different, as we discussed the last 2 weeks, is because he's born to the favorite mother, Leah, who is, of course, either hated or unloved by Yaakov to the same extent as Rachel, as we have discussed numerous times already. Here we have Rachel. Rachel is the favorite. Rachel is the chosen. She's the wife he always wanted to marry. And, of course, she has all these issues in terms of having children until finally, years later, Yosef is born. So it's not a surprise that he is going to be the favorite child, not only, of course, of his mother, but also of his father. And we see that right from the start of the Psukim. But the question that I would really like to answer by the time we get to the end, I don't know if I can see these chats, so if there's an issue going on, please unmute yourself. But the issue that we're going to discuss by the time we get to the end is, as we said last week, Yehuda is chosen for Malchus. And with all of what we would think, Yosef, the favorite of Yaakov, the favorite child, the leader of Yaakov's eyes of the family, why is Yosef not the chosen child? So I'd like to start by the beginning story of Yosef, starting from source number one, which tells us everything in the first few words. Ela toldos Yaakov, Yosef. These are the generations of Yaakov. Who is it? And all it mentions is Yosef. And I'm sure you all know that throughout Sefer Bereishit, we have this phrase, Ela toldot, and almost always it is accompanied by the names of all the children. Ela toldos Noah, Shem, Cham, and Yafet. Ela toldos Terah, Avram, Nahor, and Haran. But here, it's so strange. Ela toldos Yaakov, just Yosef. There's another example that's similar here in source number two. Ela toldos Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham holidet Yitzchak. It's very strange in dual language and certainly to be analyzed on its own. But what seems pretty clear is that when we're choosing the chosen child, then sometimes Ela toldot only gives us one name. So here one could argue, through the perspective of Yaakov himself, Ela toldos, who's that chosen child? It's Yosef. But even if we don't like this idea, even though Kliyakar brings it down here in source number two, to Ikar toldot shalo, he is the most important of all his children, being mentioned here by the fact that Yosef's the only one mentioned, it is very clear, starting Pasuk Gimel, that he is the favorite child. The Estrala Havet Yosef Mikol Banav. It can't be more blunt than that. This is the favorite. This is the special child. And Yaakov does not hide this fact. It's not being told to us as the audience of the Tanakh versus being obvious to the public, because Yaakov himself acts in a very public way in favoring Yosef. If we look at our pasuk, ki ben zikunim hulo, which I'm going to come back to, v'asa lo kitonet pasim, he makes him some sort of special garment, special coat that he doesn't make for any other child. And all of us as parents, we know that's a no-no. That's not something that we do. However, the specific thing that he makes for Yosef, I think, has a tremendous amount of significance. If you look at source number 3 with me, there are many places where we have some sort of coat or overgarment that one wears throughout Tanakh that has special significance. It's like Yaakov is giving Yosef a message by giving him this ketonet patim. He's not just saying, oh, I like you and it must be cold outside, here's a coat, but rather I'm giving you a very specific message. If you look here in source 3, there are very specific people who wear coats when it comes to Tanakh. We have Shaul, who here in Shmuel Aleph, his coat gets torn, so we know that he has a coat. He's a king. Kings wear coats. Or you have someone like Shmuel, who's a prophet, who's known for his coat. When he's brought up from the dead, it says he wore a coat. Everyone knew this about Shmuel. And Yonatan, the son of Shaul as well, who is a prince. Princes wear coats. Kings wear coats. Prophets wear coats. By giving Yosef such a garment, it's saying you're going to be something special. You're going to be something important. You're going to be a leader. But it's not just the coat itself that's significant. It's the act of handing it over. If you look at this parallel, Aaron, whose clothes are taken off of Aaron by Moshe and put on Eleazar, it's saying the next child to take over for you is going to be your son, Eleazar. Or if we have Eliyahu Hanavi, who gives over or drops it to the floor, and Elisha Hanavi picks up the Adaret of Eliyahu, it's as if to say Elisha is taking over for Eliyahu. We have this idea of giving over of a garment to say, you're next in line. So Yaakov is saying to Yosef, you're someone special, you're a leader. Not only that, you're next in line. Ela told us, Yaakov, Yosef, I think you're the one who's going to take over this chosen nation. At this point, we don't know if Yaakov knows all 12 sons will be chosen or if he is to pick a specific son. But I think it's even more than that from my favorite parallel here from Shmuel Aleph. You see, when Shmuel is given over to the Mishkan, to work in the Mishkan, because Chana, who's similar to Rachel, couldn't have children for a long time, and she makes a swear, if I have a child, I'll give him to work in the Mishkan. And when she gives him over, you see in the Psukim, she's sad. She loves her son. She has a tremendous amount of love for this child. And therefore, the Pasuk tells us that every single year, she would come to visit him in the Mishkan, where he's living with Eli, Umi'il Katan Tasalo. She would make him a coat. And you even envision this, a mother who realizes every year her son's going to grow and needs a new coat. And she comes and she brings him this coat that he uses for warmth, like the warmth of the love of his mother wrapped around him. That's the vision that you see here of Yosef. You're going to be a leader. You are the next in line. And I love you so, so much. The love of a parent being told here over in this one action of Yaakov giving over this coat to Yosef. So we see from the start, Yosef is the chosen child of his father, and we don't have to look far in the Psukim to realize this as well. As we mentioned already last week, when it comes to, I think 2 weeks ago actually now, when it comes to the story of Yaakov meeting up with Esav here in source number 4, Yosef is put all the way in the back. Yosef is protected because his father so badly wants to make sure Yosef is not hurt. The Mefarshim pick up on something really interesting. But if you look at the Pasuk, it says he puts the maid servants first and their children, Leah and her children. But then when it comes to Rachel and Yosef, Yosef comes before his mother in the Pasuk. And there's different interpretations, but I bring you here Radak, who says something so beautiful. Why is Yosef's name before his mother? Hikdim Yosef l'Rachel, source 4. Ki meirov chamlata alav, haita molicha oto lefaneha ben yadeha. She loved him so much. She was literally engulfing him in her arms, hugging him to protect him from Esav. So literally he was in front of her, but she was like holding on to him. And the vision that you have here is this boy who is absolutely treasured by his father, who is absolutely treasured by his mother. It's the opposite of the vision we pictured for Reuven, who is ignored by his father, possibly even ignored by his mother, who's too distracted trying to get Yaakov's attention. Here is a boy who has it all, has the attention of both his father and his mother. Not only that, what seems very clear is that his father keeps him home with him either most of the time or all of the time just to send him out to the field to check on his brothers. The Ramban, going back to our pasuk in source one, ki ben zukunim, who according to the Ramban means he was chosen as that one boy who stayed with his father home all day long and took care of his needs. So I have this picture of this child who has a beautiful relationship with his mother. And as we know, his mother dies at some point. He has a beautiful relationship with his father, which probably gets even stronger when his mother dies. And he's his father's reminder of his favorite wife, Rachel. They have a beautiful relationship together. Now, the question you have to ask here is, okay, I kind of see why the brothers, if I look here in Pasuk Dalet in source one, Vayiru Achav Ki Oto Ahav Avihem Mikol Banav, they pick up on this. This is not a secret that their dad loves him more. And therefore, Vayisnu Oto, they hate him. They really don't like him. They don't respect him. They don't see him through the same eyes as their father. They hate him. Later it says they're jealous of him. Can I blame the brothers when the dad is acting in such a way? But the question that I have to ask here is Yosef to blame here at all for what happens between him and his brothers? You know, I question some of his actions as well. On the one point, he's a victim. His dad treats him this way. It's not his fault that he's the favorite. It's not his fault he was born to Rachel, the favorite wife. That's not his fault. But on the other hand, if I look at source five, I start to question and learn something about Yosef's personality. It tells me that he takes a little advantage of this situation. In source number five, Vayave Yosef et Diba Tamrel Avihem. He used to tattle on his brothers. And the Mefarshim certainly have a debate. Did he tattle on the children of Leah? Did he tattle on the Bnei Shvachot, the maidservant's children? Did he tattle on all of them? Who is he tattling on? But the point is, when you're tattling on someone, you feel superior to them. He's buying into his father's picture. He's the leader of the household, even though he's much younger than all of his brothers. And therefore, he has the right to come home and tell his dad about things that they are doing. But not only does he do that, he shares with them his dreams. Now, it's one thing to have dreams of leadership. I could say, of course, he's going to dream of leadership. His dad is putting these ideas in his head. You're amazing. You're the next in line. You're the leader of the family. But then he goes and he shares those dreams. And you have to ask, did he think before he shared those dreams, what are my brothers going to react to me sharing these dreams? Don't I think they're going to get upset about sharing those dreams? That's like some of the Mefarshim say with prophecy. He had to share it because it's so hard to understand why Yosef would share, you're going to bow down to me one day, and think that the brothers will not have a negative reaction. When he says in the pasuk, Shimona halom hazeh asher chalamta, here are the dreams that I have dreamt. What do we think the brothers are going to react? So I kind of question Yosef a little bit. Was he naive? Did he not realize that sometimes when you act this way in front of people, it's going to bring about a negative reaction? Or was he not at all naive? He knew it, but he knew he was the chosen kid. So he didn't care about the reactions of his brother. I wonder it as well in terms of the fact that he wore the ketonet pasim. It's one thing to wear it in the house around your dad. He gives you a present. You need to wear it. The Malbim even says it's a house coat. You're supposed to wear it in the house. Why did he wear it that day out in the field when he was checking up on his brothers? Didn't he think that that was going to make them react in a negative way? Oh, here comes Yosef strutting in his coat that our dad gave us, possibly spying on us so he could tattle on us some more. How did he think his brothers were going to react? So when we start the story, we really see different sides to what's going on within this family, different complications to what's going on in the family. And we question Yosef's personality. We question, is he a little bit too wanting of power amongst his brothers? Does he not think about the consequences of his actions? However, I do want to take a step back and question his relationship with Yaakov. You see, Yaakov loves him. Yaakov treasures him. And I want to actually argue that that makes a ton of sense from Yosef's side as well. Besides the fact that he's born to the favorite mom, and besides the fact that she dies and he's all that Yaakov has left other than the baby Binyamin, who's born when she dies, their relationship seems to be one that is quite beautiful. And that's captured here in a bunch of psukim that you're not really sure why we have them, other than to learn about their relationship. Here in source number six, we have the story where Yaakov sends Yosef out to the field to check on the brothers. And you again could say Yosef's totally naive and he really doesn't think the brothers hate him, so he has no problem going out in the field. Or you could say Yosef knows he's putting himself in danger. but Yosef listens to his father. Yosef and Yaakov have a beautiful relationship. And Yosef said, my dad told me to do something. I'm going to do it, even if it's something that's difficult. Which is why the psukim go off on these details of saying he went to one place, couldn't find his brothers, asked around. I'm looking for my brothers. Source 6. Where are they? Most kids, if you ask them to go find something and it's not in the exact location that you told them, they come back, can't find it, right? They didn't think to look at it, even a different shelf. Here, Yosef is asking someone, should I go somewhere else? Where did my brothers go? He wants to do what his father asked him to do. And therefore, even though he finds out now they're in Dothan, he goes to Dothan. And this is pointed out by the Rashbam. Yosef wanted to do what his dad asked. The Afapi, here where I bolded, Shahaya Yodea Shemiknaim, he knew they were jealous. This is not naivete. Halach Bebaksham Kemosha Marloviv, he wanted to listen to his father. So here it gets a little more complicated. Yosef, who hangs out with his father probably more than his brothers, Yosef, who listens to everything his father says, as opposed to, let's remember, Reuven, who rebels against his father, Shimon and Levi, who gets into a massive fight with Yaakov about what they do in Shechem, Yehuda, who leaves the family. Here we have Yosef stays with his dad, listens to his dad. It's all of a sudden hard to blame Yaakov here for treating him different than he treats the rest. However, if I then continue in the story, I see a very different picture of Yosef amongst his brothers. So when I'm looking at Yosef through the lens of his father and through the relationship with his father, I see a kind boy. I see a sweet boy that his father loves, that his father sees all this potential for leadership, that his father all his love into. It's a beautiful relationship. When I look at Yosef through the eyes of his brothers, though, I see something very different. I see someone who's passive. I see someone who has no control whatsoever, someone who has no leadership role at all. Where do I see that in source number 7? When Yosef comes out to the field and he no longer has the protection of his father, he's no longer in the house where he's in charge. He's out in the field in the realm of his brothers. There is not a single action that he's able to take. Everything is passive. Source number 7. They take off his garment. They take him. They throw him into the pit. Then they later decide to take him out of the pit and sell him. And then he's brought down to Mitzrayim by a view. He is completely passive the entire time. In front of his brothers, he has no power whatsoever. And you see that very clearly in source number 8. Because in the story of Mechirat Yosef, we don't hear Yosef's perspective. We don't hear his side. He's passive. But in source number 8, the brothers reveal a detail later when they're in Egypt of something from Yosef's perspective. And they, when they're feeling all guilty about what they did, they say, source 8 where I bolded, Bitchanenu aleinu velo shamanu. He was begging us. He was begging us to help or to stop what we were doing to save him. And we didn't listen to him. And that captures it perfectly. Amongst his brothers, he has no power. Amongst his brothers, there's nothing that he can do to get them to listen to him. So on the one hand, we see the beautiful picture of Yosef through the eyes of Yaakov. But on the other hand, we see a very different picture of Yosef through the eyes of his brothers. And we see what bothered his brothers. And I think what bothered his brothers are from both ends. Source number 9, they talk about his dreams. Oh, we're going to hurt him. The Bala Halomot, the guy with the dreams. We'll see, Mayu Halomotav. Are they mad at Yosef for having the dreams? Are they mad at Yosef for sharing the dreams? Or are they mad at their father for hearing the dream and not stopping him from having those dreams, not yelling at him? He scolds him, but he doesn't really yell at him for having the dreams. Or we see source 10, they take off that coat, and then what do they do with it? They destroy it. They dip it in blood. Why are they so mad at the coat? Are they mad at Yosef for wearing it? Or are they mad at their father for giving it to Yosef? And I think, of course, it's both. We see here a very complicated relationship in this family completely, which gives us two different visions of Yosef. Yosef, the kind of naive or teaser type of brother who kind of doesn't see that there's going to be a bad reaction to the way that he's acting. He doesn't see the end. He doesn't see the consequences, which we're going to see over and over again when it comes to Yosef. But we also see a Yosef through the eyes of Yaakov, a Yosef who has potential, a Yosef who has leadership qualities, a Yosef who is his golden child. And what's interesting, when we continue the story of Yosef, we're going to start first through the eyes of everybody else other than the brothers. We see him in the house of three different places, Potiphar, then in jail, and then, of course, with Paro. And when we see him through their eyes, we see the Yosef Yaakov saw. We see the Yosef that's looked at as successful, as somebody who has potential, as someone who can be trusted, as somebody who can lead. In the house of Potiphar, source 11, he's described as Vayish Masliach. He's so successful. The master saw Ki Hashem Ito, God is with him, and everything is successful, and he finds favor in his eyes. This is kind of like what Yaakov saw in Yosef. This kid is special. There's something about him that is so unique. He's charming. He has potential. He could be great. And therefore, for Potiphar, he gives him a massive promotion. He becomes the head of his household. Everything is left in the hands of Yosef. Only someone who you see in him leadership qualities can get something like that. And then, of course, comes the downfall in the house of Potiphar, which is here in source 12. The wife of Potiphar tries to get Yosef to act with her in a very inappropriate way. And the pasuk tells us, Vayima'ein, and he refuses. And over again, she tries until finally she corners him. And he says to her, V'eichaseh haragadol hazot, how can I do this? V'chatasi lalokim, how can I do this to your husband? How could I do this to God? And every single day, she's coming over and over again until she traps him. And he has to run away, and she has his shirt in his hand. And here comes the question once again. Do I say he got a little too comfortable in the house of Potiphar? He maybe didn't say no with the force that he should have, which is why she comes back every single day, which is why he ends up in a scenario that it's only the two of them alone in the home. He got a little too comfortable. He flirted with power a little bit and therefore gets thrown back in jail. Learn your lesson again. Just like you did with your brothers, you went too far. Think about consequences. Yosef needed a new lesson. Or is it this time he learned his lesson? He said no, really strong, over and over and over again, and he refused her over and over. And we see then maybe he did learn his lesson. When there's somebody else in charge, when I'm not in complete control, I better make sure to be respectful to them. I better make sure not to touch his wife. How could I do that to my master? But then we see the similar personality of Yosef the charmer, Yosef the leader that Yaakov saw once again in jail. In jail, source 13, the similar language, Hashem is with him, everybody likes him, Vayitin Chino b'Neisar b'Sat Sohar, and everybody finds favor with him, so he becomes the head to some extent in the jail itself, giving privileges that nobody else seems to have. And then, of course, we see that pattern again when he interprets Paro's dream, and Paro says, Ruach Elokim bo, and I love this line, Ein navan v'chacham kamocha, there's nobody as wise as you. This explains to us what Yaakov saw. He saw the potential for leadership. He saw the charm. He saw the likability. He saw the wisdom that Yosef had. But once here again, we have to question as we continue along, does he go too far? Does he not continue to see consequences? Or has Yosef learned his lesson? So on that note, I want to very much fast forward, and I'm going to come backwards in a minute, but I want to talk about Yosef and Mitzrayim, Yosef with the Mitzrim, and then I'll come back to Yosef and his brothers. So I'm fast forwarding here in source 15 to Perek Mem Zion. Perek Mem Zion, there's a lot of psukim that tell us about Yosef distributing the food in Mitzrayim, Yosef giving the Mitzrim back their food, but in order to do that, he takes away all of their wealth. So first of all, if we take a step back in Mitzrayim, just thinking about him as the viceroy of Mitzrayim, he is a great leader. He for 7 years collects the food. He then is put in charge to give the food back. He is the one that runs this master plan of saving the world from famine. Clearly, the leadership qualities of Yosef are there without question. The question, though, that I ask is, what happens in this chapter? In this chapter, the Mitzrim, the people who gave their food for 7 years during the years of plenty, come to Yosef and say, we need some food. Let us buy back our food. And first, he takes away all their money, and then he takes away their animals, and then he almost takes away their land, and they offer themselves as slaves. What is the point of all these details? And I could see here a few different pictures of Yosef, which brings out different characteristics. Number one, if I look at source 15, it's interesting to see the bookends to this story. You see, the story is surrounded by details about Yaakov and his family. You see, before Yosef takes all the food from Mitzrayim, takes all their money in order to give them food, it tells us in Pasuk Yud Aleph, "Vayoshev Yosef et aviv et achav etein lamachuza be'eretz Mitzrayim." He gives everything to his family. They have a place to live. They have plenty of food. Pasuk Yud Bet, "Vayikakel Yosef et aviv et achav." He gives them food for free. They're fine. Then we take a break. We hear about how Mitzrayim is poor and giving up all their money and their animals and their land. Then we bookend it, Pasuk Chaf Zayin, fast forwarding to the end of that, and we hear about how the Jewish people are multiplying, Vayifru, Vayirbu Ma'od. Maybe the story is a tremendous story about seeing the contrast between the way Yosef treats the Mitzrayim and the way that Yosef treats his own family. And how amazing it is that because of Yosef, we, the Jewish people, multiply and become a nation. This could be the ultimate story of the leadership of Yosef, seeing all the leadership, beautiful qualities that Yaakov saw in him. That's one way to look at this story. A second way to look at this story is to kind of analyze it through different eyes. Because it's very strange to me that when we get only a generation later in Shemot, all the Egyptians hate us, they want to enslave us, and then they try to kill us all out and throw our baby boys in the Nile. Where did all the hatred come from? And then you have to ask again, did Yosef go too far? Did Yosef, by taking away all the wealth of Mitzrayim, create in them a hatred for the Jewish people? We just showed up. We didn't give any food, anything during the 7 years of plenty. We just showed up. But then you know what happened? They become impoverished. We are doing amazing. Vayifru, Vayirbu Ma'od. And the Egyptians look to us and say, wait a minute, why do you get different treatment than we do? Oh, because you're the family of Yosef. Okay, we see the favoritism, which creates some of the issues that they're going to have with us later and the hatred that they have with us later. Can I see in the story possibilities of the same Yosef I saw with the brothers going too far? Don't take all of Egyptians' money. Don't take everything away from them. They gave the food to begin with. Why did you go so far? There's a third way to look at this, which is a little bit of a different way. So I hope you give it a chance and think it through for a second. And the reason when I thought of it is because I read this incredible book by Yehoshua Bachrach on Megillat Esther. And he has this theory there, not here. I want to just kind of parallel it. And he says as follows, I'm going to say it very quickly, but you should read it inside his book, which is as follows. How do we view Ahasuerus and Haman's relationship? And he says it's possible to argue Ahasuerus was the smart one and Haman was the dumb one, which is the opposite of what we normally view. And he said as follows, Ahasuerus, he wanted to befriend everyone. He wanted everyone to love him as a king. That's why he made all these parties. But very soon after the parties, he realized Bigtan and Teresh want to kill him. He's still in trouble. This didn't work. So what he decides to do, and if you realize it happens right afterwards, he locks himself up in the palace. No one's allowed to see the king, only if you have an invitation, and then he puts up the scepter, and if not, you're dead. He pulls himself out of the limelight. Why? Because he said, I'm going to take some scapegoat, some guy who loves power, so he's going to take this position, and I'm going to raise him, and that's what he does to Haman. And he's going to be the one that says all the decrees, that does everything that I want him to do. And therefore, if people hate him, they're going to want to kill him. They're going to leave me alone. And I will therefore be successful of not being killed by anyone. If I look at it through the eyes of Paro, Paro has a problem. Here comes some guy out of jail who says, oh, your dreams mean that there's going to be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine, which means he has a predicament. Because he can spend 7 years taking food from everyone, which is, of course, the plan, take your food from everyone. But what happens if 7 years later there's no famine? Everyone's going to get mad at Paro. But on the other hand, if he ignores the guy and doesn't collect food for 7 years, and then there is a famine, everyone's going to, there's going to be massive problems, and everyone's going to blame Paro. Why did you listen to that guy? So therefore, please put on mute whoever you are, so your phone is ringing. Therefore, what does Paro do? Something crazy intelligent. He says, I'm going to pick a scapegoat.
Okay, so hold it. You'll give it back to me when I give you the check. I don't know why it took so long. It shouldn't have. It probably got lost.
But someone whose screen name is Fire needs to...
Got it. I muted. We're good. Thank you. Here, Suzanne, I can unmute you. So what Paro did, which is he raised up this guy named Yosef, nobody knew him from a hole in the wall, and he said, no problem, you'll be in charge. So therefore, you're going to be in charge, which he is. Look at the Pesukim. Paro said, everything is Yosef. He collected all the food. Now everybody's looking to Yosef. If nothing happens in the seventh year and there's no famine after 7 years, Yosef's the fool. Everyone's going to hate Yosef. And if, of course, Yosef is correct and then there is a famine and Yosef gives back all the food, Paro looks amazing. He hired Yosef. But then Paro takes advantage of Yosef and he says, collect money, collect animals, collect land. Because who are they going to hate now when they're poor and they own nothing? And of course, the pasuk tells us all the money and all the animals, it all went Paro to Paro. Paro's rich as anything, owns the entire land. And who, of course, does everybody look to as the person who did this? It's Yosef. It's a genius way of Paro accomplishing a tremendous amount, causing some hatred to Yosef. How did Yosef fall for it? Because Yosef loved power. And therefore we see negativity maybe a little bit in the story. Yosef didn't see it. He was being a puppet. He was number two to Paro, just like he was number two to Potiphar, just like he was number two to the guy in jail. He's always number two. Yosef's always number two. He didn't see it. He didn't see the flaw in the plan. So when I finish with Yosef in Egypt, I actually have a few different ways of understanding Yosef. I could look at him as this ultimate amazing leader. Everything Yaakov said he was supposed to be. It's amazing. He did it. He saves the world, which he does. And he saves the Jewish people because again, at the end, we, by your fruit, by your boom, oh, we're doing amazing. However, on the other hand, did he not see the results? Did he not see that maybe he caused some hatred between the Egyptians and the Jewish people? Did he not see maybe that Paro was using him a little bit? Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Maybe it's the same Yosef who didn't learn his lesson from before. So we're left with a very complicated picture of Yosef, but one that I think works very beautifully for his descendants and for Yosef. He likes power. He's smart. He's a good leader. He's charismatic. Many people like him. However, he can be corrupted by power and he doesn't always see the consequences of his actions. And therefore, sometimes bad things happen because of things that he does. Now, before I can move on to looking at him throughout Tanakh, I missed a large gap of the story, which is Yosef with his family. When the family comes down to Mitzrayim, what is that weird story? Jails them, he this, he that. How do I understand this in Yosef? And I'd like to believe that there's two very different ways to look at Yosef, and it's based on answering the following question, which is one that we really don't know. We can just look for clues within the Pesukim, and I'll show you how the Pesukim hint in different directions, which is when Yosef was in Mitzrayim, second in command, what did he think in his head about his family? Did he think, like many of us would believe, gosh, I hate those guys. They sold me down to Egypt. They threw me in a pit. I never want to see those people again. I'm through with my family. And that would be a very normal reaction. Or is it Yosef saying, I had a dream that I was going to lead the Jewish people. This is a vision my father put into my head for forever and ever to be part of Am Yisrael, the chosen nation of God. So I know I got to get back there. I know at some point I need to reunite with that family because that's my destiny. Egypt is just for now, but my destiny is the future. And therefore, I need to look at the reaction of Yosef to his family coming down from two very different perspectives. Is he having them come down? And when he sees them, does he want to have nothing to do with them? Or does he want everything to do with them? So let's look at the Pesukim from these two different perspectives. Does he disassociate himself from his family? Or does he want to come back to his family as much as he can? The boy with the dreams of leadership. Did he say, oh, I was wrong in my interpretation. I'm not going to lead my family. I'm going to lead Egypt. That's what my dreams were about. Silly me. But I dream of leadership. Or is it he dreamt of leading the Jewish people? Now, I want to point out that it must be he always dreamt of leadership from the beginning, because if you're thrown in jail and if you're sold as a slave, you stay down at the bottom unless you have some sort of big dream of pulling yourself up. The only way he pulled himself up in the house of Potiphar and in jail to make something in those locations because he had this dream of leadership all the time and he held on to it. It's just a question of what was he dreaming of leading at this point in time. So let's start from the beginning, looking at the story itself. Source 16. Yosef gets a new identity down in Mitzrayim. Vayikra paro shem Yosef sakna paneach. I can argue this is a new Egyptian identity. Ibn Ezra Rashbam, they say it's an Egyptian name, a new identity. Or I could say, Paro gave him the name, but he always refers to himself as Yosef. That's his official title. But his name, his identity has never changed. Or I can argue like the Ramban, like Rasag, Safna Paneach is a Hebrew name. It means the revealer of visions, which is exactly what he does to Paro's dreams. Paro asked him, what do you associate with? He told him who he was, and therefore he got a name that was the appropriate language. Continue in the pasuk. He gets married. He has a family. And specifically, he marries the daughter of Kohen On, it tells me numerous times, the daughter of a priest, someone with yichus. So here I can argue again, new identity, new family, new religion, new everything about him, and I'm going to marry for yichus. I'm going to marry to make sure that I keep this major, you know, leadership role in Egypt. I need to marry someone who's associated with leadership. Or I could say, Paro made him marry this woman. We don't know much about this woman, but Paro made him marry her. This is not Yosef changing his identity at all. But I certainly do find fascinating here in Source 16, I quoted you a Chizkuni, which is quoting a famous midrash. And this midrash tells me that Dina, after she's raped by Shechem, which is, of course, the daughter of Yaakov, has a child. And this child is a girl. And at some point, she is taken away from the house of Yaakov and ends up, according to the midrash, in Mitzrayim. Says Chazal, this is Asnat. This is the daughter of Dina. Says Chizkuni, this Nista Kelbo Yosef Shaita Bat Bitoshel Yaakov Vinasal Elisha. I can look at it different. He went through all of Egypt. I'm second command. I can pick any girl I want. So what did he find? He found the only girl in all of Egypt that in some ways attaches him back to his family. Some way attaches him back to Yaakov. Yosef is holding on to his family. So totally new identity or completely not a new identity at all. He then names his first child, Source 17. Vayikra Yosef et Shem HaBachor Menashe. Why? Ki Nasheni Elokim et Kol Amali ve Kol Beit Avi. Thank you, Hashem, for letting me forget all my troubles. Thank you for letting me forget my father's home. So new identity? Yeah, old life over. New life without my family. Thank you for letting me forget them. Or do I read it the opposite? When you say thank you for letting me forget something, that means you did not forget them. That means the first thing you're thinking about when you name that first child is your dad and your father's home, right? That's the first thing that's on your mind all the time. But the big question, of course, comes up with the following few just points that I'm going to throw out before I get to Source 18, which is, why does he not contact his family, right? If he never wants to have anything to do with them again, well, that makes sense. I'm not going to contact them because I don't want anything to do with them. If he wants something to do with them, what's he waiting for? And you could say he believed they were going to come down at some point because he knew they were going to run out of food. It could be he was confused. You know, I'm presenting two sides, but I do think it's possible Yosef himself was really confused. One day he wants to be part of his family. The next day he's like, maybe I don't. They sold me. He was kind of confused himself. I also find interesting that when the Sarah Mashkim and Sarah Ofim have dreams, Yosef volunteers to interpret them. I always find it interesting that after, you know, it didn't go well in his family's home and he interpreted his dreams, I'm going to lead my family, for him to be like, sure, I know how to interpret dreams. I feel like he would say, I'm really bad at it. I tried once and it failed miserably. So to some extent, you have to either understand that Yosef is saying, no, I believe I'm going to get back together with my family. I believe I interpreted my dream correctly. Or I misinterpreted it, but I reinterpret it now to mean I'm going to lead in Egypt. And clearly, he still believed, or he believed at some point that was going to take place. But it's a little bit difficult if he really thought that he was going to not get back together with his family. But let's get to the story itself of the reunion and see two different ways to view the story. Source 18, the brothers finally show up. We're in Perek Mem Bet. They've run out of food. They're showing up to Egypt. Yosef is now second in command, giving out all of the food. And Yosef sees his brothers. Vayakirem, he recognizes them. Vayitzna Keralehem, he disguises himself from them. He doesn't want them to know it's him. Vaydaberitam Kashot, and he is mean to them. He recognizes them. They don't recognize him. Pasuk Tet, Vayiskor Yosef et Chalomot Asher Chalam Lahem, he remembers the dreams. And then, of course, throws them into jail, calls them spies. Now, if I want to say Yosef has nothing, wants nothing to do with his family, doesn't at this point want to reunite with them, these psukim are actually really easy to understand. He sees them. He doesn't want them to know it's him, so he disguises himself. He's mad at them. He's holding a lot of anger against them, so he's mean to them. The pasuk says he remembers the dreams as if to say, I forgot them. Like my life with my father, I literally did forget about it. And now here years later, they're standing in front of me, and I want nothing to do with them. And therefore, it makes sense. Everything he does, he tries to scare them so they'll go home and never come back. He calls them spies, so they think he's crazy. This guy can accuse them of anything, throws them into jail so that they really get very scared of him, gives them back their money so that now they can't come back because this time he'll accuse them of being thieves, and they'll be right this time. He'll be right. He'll legitimately throw them into jail. He keeps Shimon to teach them a lesson that he will keep a brother, and he will not give a brother back, meaning when he says, bring back Binyamin, he knows his dad will never let them, so they'll never return. And for sure, he'll never let them because he sees he kept Shimon for no reason. So Yaakov will be like, well, what if he keeps Binyamin for no reason? Yaakov will never let them come back. So one way to look at this story is at least at this point in the story, Yosef wants nothing to do with his family. And when they show up and they ruin his new life, he tries to get them to go home and never return. But then I look at it again from new eyes. No, this is the Yosef that has ingrained in his head Yaakov telling he's going to lead the Jewish people. This is the Yosef who's held on to the dream the entire time. Now let me look at these psukim again. There's a repetition in source 18. He recognizes them, Vayakirem, and then Pasachet, Vayaker Yosef et Achav. He recognizes his brothers. And I'm wondering if this repetition is trying to teach me something. It's trying to say to me the following picture. Maybe Yosef has always been wanting to reunite with his family, right? And he knew they're going to show up when they run out of food. So what did he do every time somebody came in front of him with asking for food? He would look at them and he would look very hard. Could you be Shimon? Could you be Reuven? Could you be one of my brothers? And what happened this time? Vayakirev, oh my God, Vayakarotam, they're here. He finally recognized them. He's been waiting for them to show up. What's Vayizkor Yosef et Halavot, to remember the dream? Vayizkor in Tanakh doesn't always mean I forgot something and now I remember. Think about examples like Vayizkor Elokim et Noach, right? When the mabul's over. Do I really think God forgot about the one only human being alive in this world? No, Vayizkor means it's time to act. It's time for something to happen. Or Vayizkor Elokim et Rachel. I don't think God forgot Rachel. It's now it's time that I'm going to give her that first baby. Vayizkor here means now is the time. Now is the time I get to reunite with my family. My dreams are now going to come true. Fantastic. That works really well until the psukim continue. And he's mean to them. I mean, you're like, come on, Yosef. You want to reunite with them. What is going on? And the Mefarshim struggle with this. They really, really do. And there are lots of many, many very famous ideas, which again, because it's a shiur and not a course, I didn't give you all of these ideas on the sheet. But just to run through a few, the Ramban's famous idea that he wanted to make sure that the dream came true in order. So he needed Binyamin to come down and the brothers to bow down to him first before Yaakov came down, so he couldn't reveal himself to them. It doesn't really get all the details in. We have Abarbanel who says maybe it was revenge, which we'll come back to. Or says Abarbanel, he wanted answers to a lot of questions before he revealed himself. So by doing all these things, he's maneuvering them to answer some of his questions, which he's learning by every time they talk to each other, and he doesn't know that they don't know that he's listening and that he understands them. The famous Nechama Leibowitz approach, he was trying to get them to do tshuva. So he puts them in the same situation, makes them have to care for Binyamin, and of course to see, will you do to Binyamin what you did to me, or are you actually going to protect Binyamin? But what I want to show you is this chart that I gave you is that there's a very interesting perspective when you look a little bit differently at what Yosef did to his brothers. And what you realize very quickly is that what he's doing to them is very similar to what they have done to him. If you go from the beginning here on my chart, so they, I would say, when Yosef tattles on them, and you can imagine this every time a child tattles, normally when the other sibling gets into trouble, that sibling does not react so nicely, either punches their sibling in the face maybe, or yells at them, you were spying on me in order to get material on me to tell dad. You on purpose were trying to find something so that I would get into trouble. And therefore, I don't think it's a mistake that what Yosef accuses them of when they come down to Mitzrayim is being spies, exactly what they probably accused him of being all those years. Then, as we know, they throw him into a pit. So what does he do? He puts them into jail. And we all know that bor is also in Torah, sometimes meant as jail, not only as a pit. So he does to them what they did to him. Not only that, he accuses them of stealing. Ganov ganavti, you stole me from the land of Abram. And when they sell him, again, assuming that they did sell him, but when they sell him, they're selling him for money. They don't own him, so they're robbers. So what does he do? He makes them into robbers. He returns the money into their bag. So when they see it and they go, oh my God, and they feel like thieves. They could feel what they should have felt when they sold him or allowed him to be sold. But not only that, the hatred and the meanness that they showed him for being favored by their father. So he puts them through that same situation with Binyamin. Him favoring Binyamin, them having to go home and take Binyamin away from their father, reliving the story of the selling of Yosef and the favoritism and all of those emotions, he makes them live through it again. And the question here is, again, if it's revenge, okay, you know, but how are you reuniting with people if you're taking revenge on them? And you could say revenge feels good and then I'll forgive you, or I think it's different. I think often, especially when we talk to psychologists, they'll say in order to get over a trauma, you have to kind of relive through the trauma and you have to let other people understand what you went through. And maybe this was Yosef's way. And I believe if you take the perspective that Yosef wanted to reunite with his family, he had years to plan. What am I going to do the day that the brothers come down to ask for food? Everything is so detailed and planned because he thought about this. How will I get them to understand what they did to me? How will I get them to get it so that we could reunite as a family? And what I'm going to do, I'm never going to hurt them. He didn't hurt a soul. But what he did was he made them go through the emotions that he went through in that story. And therefore, it's possible this was his way of wanting to reunite with them. Again, if he didn't want to reunite with them at this point in the story, this is a way of getting rid of them to never come back. But of course, what Yosef does not expect or what happens next, we discussed last week, Yehuda gives a speech. And the speech of Yehuda is so incredible, and whatever it is that Yehuda makes him feel guilty. Yehuda makes him learn stuff he didn't know before, how much they care about their dad, how much they feel sorry about selling him, who knows. But the end of it is Yosef falls apart. Source 19, V'lo yechol Yosef l'tapek, he just can't handle anymore, screams out, ani Yosef, v'yitenes kolo bebechi, he cries so hard the whole Mitzrayim hears. And here's another characteristic of Yosef, which is very clear, because Yosef actually cries four different times in Bereishit. This is not the only time. He cries when he first sees his brothers and they admit they did something wrong with him. He cries when he sees Binyamin the first time. He cries here where he admits on Yosef. He cries again at the very end after his father dies and they speak to him, and we'll come back to that story. Yosef is emotional. It's a new trait that we hear in Yosef. Emotion is not necessarily a good or a bad trait. It can be a weakness sometimes in a leader. He breaks here, and Yehuda, of course, does not. So there's clearly a difference there, but it's certainly a personality trait that we see. However, at the end of the day, Yosef comes back now to the Jewish people, whether it was planned or not planned, I don't know. But here in this story, the ending of the story is he reunites with his family now. Maybe his plans were always to, maybe they weren't, but he then treats them amazingly, as we mentioned before, but here it is again in source 20. He puts them in Goshen, he takes care of them, we multiply, we become a nation because of Yosef. And the ending of the story, which is such a fascinating one, is that Yaakov ends up giving Yosef two brachot. One he gives in Perek Memchet to just Yosef and his sons, and then in Perek Memtet to all of the tribes. And you have to ask, what's this special bracha here in Perek Memchet? Why does he give this special bracha, Ephraim and Menashe, Keruvein, the Shimon, Yuli? And I always wonder if you can kind of put it together with my two pictures. If Yosef the whole time was like, I'm just waiting for the day to reunite with my family, then here is Yosef coming back to the family, and Yaakov saying, things have changed now, Yosef. You are no longer going to be the chosen kid, but rather you're going to have a special status. Your children, both of them, will be Shvatim like Reuven and Shimon. You'll be the Bechor. You'll be chosen. You'll get double portion, but you're not the only one chosen. Things have changed since you left. You're now going to be part of Am Yisrael. Everybody is chosen. But there's a second way to look at it, which is found here in this Midrash in Pesikta Rabbati, which is if Yosef disassociated himself and said, you know what, I'm Mitzri now, and then tried to rejoin the family. Now on his father's deathbed, he's terrified. What if they don't let me back in? Just because I want to be part of Am Yisrael again, maybe they won't let me. Maybe they won't let my children. My children are Egyptian. this Medrash in Pesikta Rabbati asks that exact question. He's worried, maybe Yaakov won't be able to bless my kids. And the Medrash goes on, Yaakov couldn't originally. He wasn't able to. And Yosef starts crying. No, they're good people. Please let them be part of Am Yisrael. And at the end, of course, they're blessed. So here, this extra blessing in Perek Mem Chet, is it saying plans have changed? You're still chosen. You're the Bechor, but you're not the only one chosen. Or is it saying, guess what? You're allowed back in. Right, we're giving you permission to come back in. Now in Perek Mem Chet, you get a bracha along with everyone else. But we still have to ask, did Yosef learn his lesson? Did he understand that power can corrupt? Does he understand that you need to see the results of consequences of things that you've done? And I want to give you, because we need still time for the rest of the Yosef characters, source 22 and source 23, where we see two stories that maybe can represent for us the fact that Yosef learns from his mistakes. In Perek Mem Chet, when his dad, the story I was just talking about, is blessing his sons, as we know, his dad puts his right hand on the younger child. And Yosef speaks up and says, no, lo kein avi ki zeha b'chor, please, please don't mess him up the way you did to me. Put your right hand on my oldest child. And you see there Yosef understanding the consequences of the favoritism. Sadly, Yaakov says, too bad, because the younger child is going to be more chosen than the older. But at least you see an understanding of Yosef to what occurred to him in the past. So to source 23, after his father dies, his brothers come to him and they fill his dream. What do? They fall on the floor. We will be your slaves. This is always what you dreamt. This is what you want. Here it is. And Yosef, instead of saying, hey, my dreams came true, he's sad. He cries and he says, no, this is not what I want. I want to be part of Am Yisrael. And he ends up comforting them. He does not accept what they are offering. So you do see a change in Yosef by the end of Bereishit, which is beautiful. But the qualities of Yosef that we clearly do see is a desire for leadership and good at it. He is very good at being a leader, but he can also be corrupted by it. He can be emotionally weak sometimes. He's always number two. He's never number one. Not always thinks about the outcome of his actions. And another thing that's interesting, which will take me now into our next story, is he's got a lot of ups and downs. You know, he's up in his family's house, then he's sold as a slave, up in Potiphar's house, down in jail, up again in jail, brought in front of Paro, and then becomes up and down, second command. You know, ups and downs. And you see that also in the Chumash when it comes to Yosef, which is so interesting. Because in Bereishit, Yosef is the superstar. Starting from Perek Lamed Zayin, we don't stay with Yaakov and the sons. We follow Yosef into Mitzrayim. He's the star. The end of Bereishit is Yosef dies. The end of Bereishit is Yosef making them all make a promise on his deathbed. He's the star. And we start of Shemot kind of the same. Source 24, Yosef dies and all the brothers. He's the star. We hear about him. But then we hear there's a new king that doesn't know Yosef. And at this point, Yosef's characters drop off the map for a little bit. They have their down in our history. They come back up and say for Shoftim. They comes back up and say for Yoshua. Comes back down for a while, and then he comes back up when it comes to Malachim again. Yosef has a lot of ups and downs. But if we look at the personalities of the people who come from Yosef, they really very much resemble Yosef. And with the time we have left, I will try to get through as many of them as I can. The first, I would say, during the time of Moshe, Moshe from Levi is the major leader. We saw last week that there's a lot of Yehuda characters during the time of Moshe. There certainly is Yoshua, who is from Yosef, is from Ephraim. I'm going to come to him in a few minutes. Besides that, there's a few smaller ones, which I want to run through. Number one, the Benot Slavcha. Benot Slavcha reminds me of Yosef a little bit. There's a problem, like there's a problem with Lantim Mitzrayim. They come up with a very unique way of solving the problem. You know, to us, it's like, duh, women should get land. But at that time, that was a huge deal, not just solving the problem for them, but solving the problem for everyone. Like Yosef thinking about how to solve the problem of food for everyone, come up with a unique idea, has the guts to go and present it, and to make sure that this change happens for all of the people. It's a very Yosef-esque type leadership, very positive, coming out of Benot Slavchad. However, the other half of the story, source 26, brings out, I would say, a little bit more of the negative side. The people from Menasha, which is where Slavchad comes from, says, hey, we're going to lose some land. We don't want to lose land. We don't want to lose power. You always feel like Yosef's trying to hold on to all the power and all the land they possibly can in so many stories. And of course, they solve that problem by Benot Slavchad marrying from within the tribe. But if we go on to the really the only character during the time of Moshe, and of course after Moshe, because he becomes the leader from Yosef, I would say that is, of course, Yoshua from Ephraim. Now, Yoshua has all the greatness of Yosef. Yoshua is one of my favorite characters, and I gave it to you here in Source 27, by Avod Yisrael Hashem Kol Yimei Yoshua. It was a great time during the time of Yoshua. We served God during Yoshua. Like, things are good. I am not coming here to say bad about Yoshua. But I do see a lot of the Yosef good characters, characteristics in him, and some of the negative, not the corruption by power in any way, but other things about Yoshua. Number one, if I want to go through this pattern of Yosef's always number two, this fits Yoshua beautifully. Throughout everything, he's always called the Misharet Moshe, Misharet Moshe, he's second to Moshe. Source 28, the first thing we hear him do, conquering Amalek, it's what Moshe tells him to do, Moshe instructs him to do. Source 29, Moshe even puts his spirit on him, his hands on him. He is doing everything Moshe tells him to do. He copies Moshe in every single way. Source 30 to me is like the pasuk that describes Yoshua. Everything God told Moshe to do, Moshe told Yoshua. Yoshua does it all. Yoshua, in a lot of ways, lives in the shadow of Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Not only that, the emotional part of Yosef, the slight weakness to Yosef, I see in Yoshua as well, in the fact that his name in this week's Parsha has changed from Hoshea to Yoshua to make sure that he's strong against the Meraglim. The fact that I gave you here, it's in small, but seven times in the Psukim, he's told, be strong, be strong, be strong, you're going to be okay, which means the man is terrified out of his mind, so we keep telling him it's going to be okay. He makes it through. But you see the little bit of the softness, the vulnerability that you see of Yosef, you see that coming through in Yoshua. I also question here in Source 32, where there seems to be a blame at the end of Sefer Yoshua. We didn't conquer all our territories, so things go bad in the time period of Sefer Shoftim. And there's a slight blame on Yoshua, Sherazav Yoshua Vayemet. He left over before he died. Is it he doesn't see the consequences, just like Yosef, that bad things will come with the fact that he didn't force that we killed out all of our enemies? A very slight comment here in Source 33. I just thought it's fascinating that Yosef himself and Yoshua both die at the age of 110 and that it's mentioned so many times. They connect in that way as well. In Source 34 is the only time we hear about the tribe of Yosef during the time of Yoshua. And it reminds me of the Menashe story I said a second ago, where they come to Yoshua and they say, can I have more land? They're always looking for more land. They're always looking for a little more power, a little more stuff. And Yoshua tells them no. They ask incorrectly so. He says, conquer the land that you have. But it certainly is a pattern. If I move on, Source 35, I got someone by the name of Devorah. Devorah to me is the goodness of the tribe of Yosef. During the time of Sefer Shoftim, if you remember, we said Yehuda Ya'aleh, Yehuda is supposed to lead. But Yehuda doesn't step up. Yehuda doesn't lead. He starts with Otniel and then disappears. So who steps up? Yosef steps up. So as you'll see, almost all the Shoftim, all the judges come from Yosef because Yosef steps up. So Devorah, who becomes this tremendous leader, and she's a female who steps up to lead, which is amazing. We have Gidon, who comes from Menashe, who's also a pretty good leader. He has a little bit of that vulnerability, a little bit scared to lead, needs a lot of signs. He for sure has an issue of not seeing consequences. At the end of his leadership, he builds an ephod, which becomes an avodah zarah. So he has that same issue that, of course, Yosef has. His son, Avimelech, which I don't believe is actually his name, but rather the boy, if you see her in Source 37, by his famous Shema Avimelech, he names himself Avimelech. Avimelech is the epitome of the evil, of the corruption of Yosef. He wants the power. He names himself, my father is king, so I'm king. He kills 69 of his brothers and makes himself king and kills anyone that gets in his way. This is certainly, I would tell you, the epitome of the corruption of power of Yosef. Here we have Yair, I'm flying through because of time. Yair, who all we hear about him and say for Shoftim, he has 30 sons and 30 sons who ride around on donkeys, which means he's a leader and he's training his children to be leaders. We see this desire for leadership in Yosef. But Yiftach is one I have to pause for a second, because Yiftach's story is Yosef's story. Here is a boy who's the son of a different mother, who the brothers kick him out of the house because Lo Tincha V'Beit Avinu, we don't want you to inherit from our father's home. So they kick him out. And when they get into trouble, they beg him to come back and lead and fight them, which of course he does. It's Mamash the Yosef and the brothers' story. And he as well does not think of consequences, Source 40. He's the one that makes a swear the first person to come out of my house, I will give as a korban, and it's his daughter. So that is not a very good ending to his story. But here is where we really do see the kind of two sides to Yosef. On the one hand, as I just said, they stand up to leave. During the time of Sefer Shoftim, we have 119 years of leadership of Yosef, which is more than a third of the time period. Yosef steps up to lead. But on the other hand, sometimes they get corrupted by power because they like that power. During the time of Yitzchak, a civil war takes place between Ephraim and Menasseh because they're fighting over leadership. We also have a Sefer Shoftim, just to throw out a few more names. Source 43, Micha, who builds a pesa, builds an idol in his home because he wants people to worship God within his own home. And of course, we can't end until we see Yeravam, who's the king that takes over 10 tribes away from the Malchus of Yehuda. And in the beginning, he reminds me of Yosef. He's charismatic. Everybody likes him. That's how he can take 10 tribes away. But he becomes corrupted so, so quickly. And I gave you here, because it's just so fascinating, the story where he's told he's going to be the king reminds you of the story of Yosef. The prophet Achiah comes, takes off, it's a little bit ambiguous whose coat, so for this parallel it would have to be Yeravam's coat, takes off his coat, tears it into pieces to symbolize you're getting 10 tribes but not two, similar to the story of the brothers tearing off Yosef's coat, destroying Yosef's coat, using the same language as Sher Alav. It's a very similar storyline. But Yeravam gets corrupted because he's so scared that people are going to return to Yehuda. So he makes his own holidays. He makes his own, and then we start to serve Avodah Zarah. So again, he's great in the beginning and then gets corrupted by power. So if I look at all of these different characters of Yosef and, of course, of Yehuda, and I want to bring together everything that we've mentioned, we see very specific patterns. Reuven wants the leadership. He wants it. He's the oldest child. But you know what? Yosef's also the oldest child, just of a different mother. And the two of them kind of go head to head in a lot of ways in Bereishit. But Yosef is by far the favorite. He's the one that gets the attention of their dad. And therefore, as we see here, the pasuk I read you last week or 2 weeks ago, source 46, Reuven loses his Bechor status and the Bechorah goes to Yosef. But if I put Yehuda and Yosef next to each other, I see two strong, strong characters in Bereishit. Yehuda is clearly the family leader who comes from Leah. And we have Yosef, who in his dad's eyes is the family leader, but not really the leader. And if I look every time they go head to head in Bereishit, Yehuda wins and Yosef loses. Source 47, let's sell Yosef. The brothers listen to Yehuda. Yosef, this is a pasuk I read before, screaming, don't sell me, don't sell me. Who do they listen to? Yehuda. When we get to source 48, Yehuda approaches Yosef to convince him not to keep Binyamin. Of course, he doesn't know he's talking to Yosef. Who wins? Vaigasha love Yehuda. Yehuda wins. Yosef starts to cry. Yosef says, Ani Yosef. Yosef can't stand up to Yehuda. And again, source 49, even Yaakov doesn't trust Yosef at the end so much, sends Yehuda ahead to gain way in Mitzrayim, to figure out where they belong in Mitzrayim, because he doesn't fully trust Yosef at the end. So here we have three times Yehuda, Yosef go head to head, Yehuda wins. So if I'm going to ask the question again, which is why Yehuda versus Yosef gets the leadership at the end, so I can easily answer. Well, if I look throughout Tanakh, Yehuda always seems to win, not just in Sefer Bereishit, but in the Degalim, Yehuda's the leading Degel, even though Yosef has a Degel. You know, if I take Hor, Kalev from Yehuda, Yehoshua, right? And Yehoshua, right? So Kalev in this week's Parsha seems to be stronger than Yehoshua, stands up to the Meraglim. You know, throughout, it sounds like Yehuda always wins. Malchus Yehuda goes into Galus at the end. Mashiach from Yehuda seems to win at the end. So if you ask the question, why Yehuda? And again, because of time, I'm not going to read out loud, but please read it. The Rav Soloveitchik has a beautiful piece of saying that they represent different things. Yehuda represents Gevura. Yehuda is stronger. And when you have leadership, you need strength. And therefore, Yosef has tremendous qualities of leadership, but Yehuda wins at the end of the day. But I'd like to present a second theory, and with this I will close, which is maybe from the start, the point was always to have two leaders, was to have the ultimate leader, which is Yehuda from Leah, but to have the secondary leader, Yosef from Rachel. And the two of them getting along is actually what's ideal. Having Yehoshua and a Kalev is actually what's ideal, what's working together. Having leaders from both tribes is actually what is ideal. And this is captured so beautifully in Source 51 and Source 52 about the future. If you look at Yechezkel, it's a beautiful prophecy. Take one stick with the name Yehuda, one stick with the name Yosef, and put them together and be one nation. Yehuda and Yosef should work together. Or a beautiful midrash here in Source 52, if you look at the end, what does it mean that Yeshayahu says the Aryeh, which represents Yehuda, and the ox, which represents Yosef, that they will eat straw together? They will no longer be jealous with each other. In the future, the Mashiach from Yosef and the Mashiach ben David will work together in harmony. And therefore, I think by analyzing the leadership abilities of Yosef and Yehuda, you actually see they fit together so beautifully. The flaws of Yehuda, which is corruption in terms of women, we never have that issue when it comes to Yosef. The flaw of Yosef of corrupt by power, we really don't have that issue by Yehuda. The flaw of Yosef of being a little vulnerable, a little emotional, Yehuda is as strong as can be. Their qualities go together so beautifully. When one falls, the other one is supposed to pick up. One's flaws is what the other one's strength. Yehuda and Yosef working together in the future is, I think, the picture of what is supposed to be the leadership of Am Yisrael. I thank you very much for this series, and I hope a wonderful day. I don't know what I'm hearing, but everyone, thank you so much for joining, and I hope you enjoyed as well.